our side.
The American side.
Let's listen to the year wrap-up.
Good idea.
I'm Newt Gingrich. Hear me roar.
I'm Mitt Romney, and I'm running for president.
All Democrats are unimaginable.
They fixed 9/11.
Wait, that's 2010. Here's 2011.
I'm Newt Gingrich. Hear me roar.
I'm Mitt Romney, and I'm running for president.
All Democrats are unimaginable.
They fixed 9/11.
When I'm elected, I'll kill 3 departments. Education, commerce, and
shut down the government!
Take back the world! It belongs to me, not us.
Fukushima means we have to build somewhat safer reactors to make up for the lost electricity and money.
I'm Mitt Romney, and I'm running for president.
Mitt Romney is crazy. I'm Newt Gingrich.
You're both crazy.
Another third is on.
Thank God Wall Street is there to help us recover.
Mr. Speaker, my bill would make poverty illegal.
Communists in Wisconsin have recalled 2 Republicans. Satan has taken control of Wisconsin.
Thank God President Bush finally killed Bin Laden.
The world ends in May.
Communists in Ohio have repealed the Fair Play to Godless Unions Act. Satan has taken control of Ohio.
I'm Mitt Romney, and I'm running for president.
I remember now. Oops.
That was pretty informative.
Yes, now we have the whole picture.
Except for the hippies on Wall Street.
There aren't any hippies on Wall Street. Only responsible job creators.
I mean, Occupy.
Oh, them. Well, they're gone.
I'm worried.
Don't worry. As long as there's pepper spray, they won't be a problem.
I hope you're right.
So all we have to do is focus on the election.
And God.
Right. God will win the election for us.
When we get a candidate.
God will pick our candidate.
He always does.
Thank God for God.
We know Satan's running against God.
The Democrat.
Right.
I say, death to Satan.
Death to Satan.
And now, on to Iowa.
Well, that's enough for this time.
Right. So for Bob and Betty, I'm Bob. Goodbye.
Why? Are you leaving?
No, you are. I got the word.
The Bob and Betty Show. Sounds like opinion, but it's really fact.
You do this every time. You read my lines and tell lies.
Happy New Year.
I'm telling the boss.
Happy New Year.
And he told me if I had any more complaints, he would kill you.
Bring it on.
Well, it isn't really the Bob and Betty Show. That's our April Fool's joke. I wanted to get the first one in. And I'm not Leo Gold. That's the other thing. Let's see. I guess, Doyle, just so we can just establish what show this really is, why don't we just go ahead and run, and we'll run 5-10 seconds, and then people will know that we really are the authentic people, because nobody else could get this theme. Okay. Yeah, it's the new Capitol. And it's the big year-end new Capitol show.
Oh, yeah. Is it that time of day?
Right. It's that time of day. 3 here in Houston. That's when it's done. From the studios of KPFT in Houston, it's the New Capital Show. I'm Otis McClay, sitting in for Leo, who is, he's out of town. He's actually, I think, with family. It's not on assignment, I'm not going to lie. And Doyle's here, and we're here, and I'm going to talk about religion. So, the number, of course, is 713-526-5738, JAM KPFT, and that is the number to get on the air. But the thing that I was going to talk about, because it is the New Capital Show, is how come people who claim to be Christian, Jewish, I guess even Muslim now, although that certainly wasn't on Wall Street for a long time, how come they can do what they do and go to church on Sunday? So I'm going to kind of be talk about Christianity here, only because it's what I'm most familiar with. And it also follows my experience with Wall Street. When I lived in New York many years ago, we had children, and my wife wanted to have, she wanted to go to church. She thought that would be a cool thing. So we went to a church that was pretty close to where we lived called St. Bartholomew's, an Episcopal church. Some of you may know what St. Bartholomew's is or may have heard of it. Actually, there was a great film that I really liked. My current heroine was Angelina Jolie playing Evelyn Salt. And it was interesting to watch that because they blew up St. Bart's, which is the church, you know, that I had gone to. But the thing about St. Bart's that people in the know, that is probably the second richest church in the country. And that is because people from Wall Street go there. That's where the Brahmins go. They go to St. Bart's or Trinity, which is the richest church. And a lot of them go to both. Those are the two Wall Street churches. So they go to this church on Sunday, and they hear all this stuff about, you know, what Jesus said about, you know, you're supposed to be nice to people and, you know, not hurt them. Then they go back to work during the week and get people fired, thousands of people fired from their jobs. They suck money. They cheat people. I mean, the amount of cheating and outright fraud that went on during this debacle over the period of like 2000 to 2000. 207, 208, when it all crashed,
right,
is unbelievable. How much, you know, and of course, nobody's prosecuting it. Although, no, we actually do have a suit in Boston, in Massachusetts now. And Eric Schneiderman in New York is working on stuff. And what's his first name? Joe Biden's son, who's the Attorney General of Delaware, is all working. They are the people who did not sign the agreement among all the state's attorney generals that they wouldn't prosecute any of these crimes.
I see.
And so they're trying to do their job. But it was rife. I mean, it was thousands of people committing outright fraud and going to church on Sunday. And when you commit fraud, you're basically screwing your neighbor. That's what you're doing. And
right.
You know you're doing it. So I go to church on Sunday and, you know, do all of the ritual stuff that the churches do on Sunday, and there's a lot of talk about being nice, and then they go and keep doing it again. And I'm trying to figure out what is the mental process, the level of rationalization. What is the mental process that allows this? That's what I can't figure out. I cannot figure it out. And then it comes down to, well, you know, why even bother with religion? Because there's the other thing, you know, how much horrible stuff has been done in the name of religion and how much horrible stuff is going on right now in the name of religion. I mean, you got two groups of people in Iraq who are trying to kill each other. And they're both Muslim. They're both and they have this, you know, difference about who's going to be the next boss. But basically, I don't think there's anything in the Quran that says you're supposed to kill anybody you disagree with. In Israel, with the the settlements right now, excuse me, there's a whole business of the what are now being called the ultra-Orthodox spitting on kids, on, well, we know this one particular girl who was walking by. I don't know. I don't think that's in the Talmud. I don't believe it's not in the Torah. I mean, it's not in the Haftorah.
I've seen other Orthodox groups talking about that Israel shouldn't exist. I mean, there's a lot of perspectives from different Orthodox groups.
And, you know, it's like religion ultimately seems to open the way for people to act really crazy. As far as I know, with the possible exception of maybe Satanists, every religion has the golden rule. I have a thing on the wall at home, you know, just a piece of paper, but it's the statement of the golden rule from every religion that we know of. Now, maybe not some of the animists in Africa, but I suspect they do too. There's a reason that the golden rule is part of every religion. It's because if you don't have the golden rule, basically the society won't work.
Right.
Ultimately, it's going to fall apart. We're experiencing, Rome experienced it. We get down to this extreme separation of wealth. So in this country, 0.1% owns 90% of the wealth. 0.1% of the people own 90% of the wealth. We know that of major contributors to campaigns, I think there were 13 people, something like 13 people, give by far the most money to campaigns. This is crazy. And all these people, well, maybe not all, but a lot of them, the Brahmins on Wall Street, go to church. They have to show up at church. It's part of their social responsibility. And yet they're part of this whole process of sucking money from the poor and the middle class and keeping it for themselves.
You think it's a lack of faith in their own beliefs that makes them act that way? I mean,
I don't know.
Or do you think it's just...
I knew some who actually believed this stuff, or they would talk as though they did. But, you know, if you have any kind of relationship with God, it's with you all the time.
Mm.
You know? And one of the things that kids are taught in Sunday school, and again, I'm speaking Christianity, although this is also true in Judaism, and I'm pretty sure it's true in Islam, God's watching you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, God is looking at you and you know, writing what you do in the book and all that stuff, and then you're going to be judged. I mean, that's kind of the basic system. That's not so true in Judaism, but it is very much part of Christianity and I think Islam. Maybe somebody can correct me. So if you knew that and you carried that with you, and then you did something that you knew was going to result in 50,000 jobs being lost and guys being on the street,
how do you sleep at night?
Yeah. Well, how do you do that? I mean, what do you do? Because there has to be a moment when your consciousness will say, wait a minute, what about God? You know, and I guess you push it aside. I don't know. And maybe Mike knows. Let's go to the phones. Mike, hi. You're
on. How
are
you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm giddy.
You're giddy?
I aspire.
You aspire.
I aspire to the level of degeneracy for which you most aptly reach.
I know. I've been working on it all my life, and, you know, I haven't been able to get there yet. That's probably where I ain't rich.
Well, you know, excuse me for being a little distracted here. I'm having a little Mooberg, and I can taste the squeal in the meat.
Mike is referring to some ancient history. I should bring that back.
Ancient
I had a friend,
history.
A family, and they had a tradition, and every year they would sing something at their family gathering, and his daughter sang the Mooberg commercial.
So, I love it.
Highly embarrassing.
I love it. Okay, here's the deal I think goes with religion. I sincerely believe that religion is a proxy to gain, just a proxy, a tool for leverage, to gain the higher moral ground. If you have the higher moral ground, that raises your level, your status in the eyes of others. And if you have the higher moral ground, your actions are less likely to be questioned.
Okay, that's good. I like that. Now, of course, again, speaking Christianity, Jesus did have some things to say about people who prayed in public, as you recall.
Absolutely.
And, oh, and so by the way, he was saying you can't really use religion to look good.
Hey, Otis, you know, the funny thing about that is that the people that are, you know, the Bible-thumping people that want to go to war, war hawks, you know, all of those type of American Christians tend to also be the ones that want everyone to pray in school and pray in public. And,
yeah, interesting.
You know,
interesting.
Even though the Bible says not to pray in public, you know.
It says not to pray in public, and I believe that I don't believe that Jesus ever suggested going to war as a solution to an issue.
I think it was the opposite of what
In fact, that was one of the big things that that was one of the big contentions between him and the religious of the time, who of course were Jewish, that he was not a leader in battle.
Mm-hmm.
That was one of the reasons that they didn't want him to be the Messiah. I'm sorry, Mike, you had something?
Well, you know, you've opened up a can of worms with this religion stuff.
Yeah,
and what gets me
bad.
As a science guy, the old argument of creationism or intelligent design and evolution, it drives me nuts.
Well, may I say something to that?
Sure.
Okay. Essentially, what the creationists and the intelligent design people who are, you know, descendants, and of course it's a public relations, it's a change of a name, they're actually saying we are the only ones who could determine how God operates. That's what they're really saying. If you think God can create the world any way she wants.
Can I
speak? They're saying no, God can only do it in 6 days.
Can I speak?
Of course.
Okay, we're getting back to the set, this again, God, they're defining God.
Right.
And it goes back to what I first said about gaining leverage, about gaining power, about getting what you want, whatever it be.
Yeah.
And you know, and it's actually a select type of Christian that believes that takes Genesis literally. I don't even think in Judaism they take Genesis literally.
No. The Old Testament, you know. Well, of course, myth is somebody else's religion, right?
Mm-hmm.
The New Testament, Mike, you've probably heard shows that I've done years ago where I'd have Bishop Spong on. John Spong was the bishop of the Diocese of Newark, and he was the first first bishop to ordain a woman and first bishop to ordain an openly gay person. And he'd grown up as a fundamentalist in South Carolina. So he'd really been down the whole road.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the things he pointed out was you have to look at the Bible. It's written in a certain it comes from a certain culture. And that the culture that it came from, the culture where the Bible was written, would say things. So when they said when Joshua was attacking whatever that town was, and
Jericho,
and it said the sun stood still in the sky.
You know, it's interesting. Yes,
that's what it said. Okay, now from their cultural point of view, what they're really saying is it was as though the sun stopped still in the sky.
Of course,
and it a lot of things are written as poetry. Tremendous amount of poetry in the Old Testament.
Of course,
the
Hebrew, New Testament is supposed to be more of an account, though, right? And except for Revelations, which is supposed to be poetry as well.
There are things in the Old Testament. There are law, you know, the law, the Leviticus and Numbers, but the Western culture looks at it as a historical report. Is it accurate? Is it true? From looking at the Bible from that culture, and it says the sun stopped in the sky, then they're going to say, yeah, literally it stopped. Now, you know, obviously we know, well, first of all, God can do anything she wants. So that's one thing. There's a phone call. But it's unlikely that God would have stopped the earth rotating. You know, it would have been a big deal to do that. I mean, there would have been a lot of fallout from that project.
You know, I've seen
so
him.
It's unlikely that the sun actually stopped in the sky.
Wait a minute. I've seen him, actually. I've seen God bring the sun closer to the earth. You know, I watched the son of Song of Bernadette, and he done did that and dried all the folks off, and then they all got scared and paranoid, but he took it away and put it back where it was.
Okay, well, you know.
That's fact.
These are all things that we could say. and we can say it's fact, but there's a lot of stuff in the Bible that that isn't fact, actually, even though it's interpreted that way, and doesn't have to be fact. It doesn't have to be fact in order for the story to be true.
Did y'all know that the Big Bang Theory was actually coined by a Catholic priest that was a scientist?
I wouldn't be surprised. You got another one. Apparently people like this. Mike, I'm going to let you go.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you, and thank you for remembering.
Oh,
I really appreciate that. It makes me feel like, you know, I was alive once. Hey,
you still there?
Yeah.
Man, say hi or just give, plant a big fat one on Huey.
Oh, yeah. No, I get Huey's email. It's great. Now, we should have him on. We got to have him on sometime.
You got it, man.
All right. Thanks, Mike. Hey, Philip.
Yes, I think we got to bring it back to that classic quote, what would Jesus do?
Well, that's, you know that's like a great question.
I believe Jesus led his life as an example to all of us how we should lead our lives. And that's why he wasn't out there trying to kill people. He was out there trying to make amends and, you know, forgive and to heal and bring love and charity,
but isn't,
not war and strife.
Isn't that implicit in Christianity in general? Isn't that kind of implicit that that those teachings are the teachings that and part of the teaching is his example, the way he lived, that is the example we're supposed to follow?
That's probably the biggest thing that's forgotten.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder, you know, and, I mean, Jesus was a mason, right? He was a carpenter. He was called a carpenter, but they were all, it's all the same.
Right.
They built in stone and wood. You know, I mean, did he screw homeowners?
Nope.
Probably not.
As a matter of fact, well, look at the heretics back in the day. He went and made friends with the
tax gatherers, right?
He went and made friends with the he helped the whore on Sunday or whatever.
Well,
you know?
Yeah, that's another subject.
They lost their minds because they were fundamentalists. They were all up in arms about it, and what they wanted to do, they wanted to kill him. So, I mean, that's exactly what we're up against today. Nothing has changed. What would Jesus do?
Yeah, and it seems that that's sort of lost, and that is, and that's really my question. Would some guy who's committing fraud and getting some guy to sign on to an adjustable rate subprime mortgage that he knows is going to screw him in 2 years, would he do that if he were saying, what would Jesus do? Because I doubt that Jesus would have done that. And yet, out of all the people who were doing that, we know that a bunch of them go to church or go to synagogue or go to the mosque or, you know, any other number of things. I mean, Buddhists, it's all there with the golden rule. So could he have done that? And you know, it's a really weird thing. Philip, what else? I got more calls. You got anything?
What would Jesus do? Remember it.
Say again?
Say, what would Jesus do? Remember it.
Yeah, well, I think that's, you know, that's kind of an interesting question, and it would help. Scott, hey.
Hi.
Let me give the number, 713-526-5738. And what we're talking about is religion and screwing people from Wall Street. Say, Scott, hey.
Well, when I was 10 or 11, I read Immanuel Velikovsky's book, Walls in Collision, and he said that the sun stood still because a comet went by the Earth and stopped it from spinning temporarily, and the comet later became Venus.
That's good.
Yes, well.
And that happened, when did that happen? That happens 5,000 years ago?
Yeah, well, I was pleased at the time that he came up with a scientific explanation for the events in the Bible.
But you know, Velikov, it is a little...
Why does there have to be a scientific explanation? Yes. Why can't
it
be poetry?
Here's the thing. He's interpreting it in that Western tradition.
Exactly. That's the whole point.
That it actually
had to
have happened.
Christianity isn't even a Western religion.
But don't you think that if indeed, and this is just a question, Scott, in spite of Velikovsky, do you think that maybe there would have... If a comet actually went by and stopped the Earth from rotating, would that have been, A, the only effect, and, B, would the Earth have just kind of stopped quietly and, you know, no fallout, no little earthquakes or, you know, because, I mean, the molten core is still turning. I mean, think about all of that stuff.
Well,
it would have been kind of interesting.
Well,
do you accept Velikovsky or?
Well, many years later, I began to hear that Velikovsky was not a good scientist, and I could see that he did not understand He had nothing good to say about astrophysics.
Really?
It's not good physics to suppose that a comet goes by the Earth and it stops Earth stops rotating, and then it starts rotating again when the comet.
Right.
That doesn't.
And that its orbit remains the same.
That's not good physics.
Probably not.
Also, Venus has one of the most circular orbits, most regular orbits. Venus and Mars have the most nearly circular orbits. That is not what you would expect from a captured comet, but Velikovsky.
Well, also, comets aren't that rocky or solid generally.
Okay, they're made of hydrocarbons.
So.
And Velikovsky also tried to explain events in the Book of Amos in terms of Mars being a captured comet.
Well, you know, one of the things about religion that's interesting. And one of the things I find fascinating with people who claim to be religious, people say they know what God wants. There's some evidence, perhaps. There is one theory, there's one person who puts forth the theory that there are actually three gods. God, theoretically, at least from the Christian dogma, is not changeable. And yet we look at three different kinds of manifestations in the Bible. We have a vengeful God. We have the Creator God, the Vengeful God, the War God, and then we have the Christian God, which are three kind of different personalities.
Oh, God called Rick Perry to run for president, and then he made Rick Perry make a fool of himself.
Well, he's got his own God. Yeah, the thing is, first of all, you're selling. What are you selling when you're selling religion? There's no proof. We don't really have proof that God exists. I have my own two personal proofs, a clam and a cat's paw. But, if you know what clams eat and how they taste, only God could create such a creature. it's amazing. Look at a cat's paw. It's just, an amazing tool. Who came up with that? We don't really have any proof, so it's very easy to say just about anything you want. You can just say, God wants this, God wants that. Jesus said, many will come in my name.
It's not really supposed to be an evidence-based thing, I don't think, religion.
So for that reason, you can get away with anything.
Pretty much.
You generate religions and do all kinds of stuff. And so the very evanescent character of God, that we can't see God or control God, means that we can make up almost anything we want. And biblically, the only person who ever saw God was Moses, right? Moses talked to the burning bush, and he said, look, I got to see you. I can't stand anymore. God said, you can't look on God, right, without going crazy.
I thought Ezekiel saw something.
No, what he saw was God walking away.
Oh.
So he saw God's backside. That was it. That's the only time that we know of that God was actually ever seen. And, there are all kinds of theories. We could say that, there were aliens and blah, blah, blah. But basically, we're dealing with something you can't prove. And that's why we talk about faith all the time. You have to have faith. You have to have faith. And I guess we need God because it's pretty universal. But the God that we have is pretty much one we created.
You know why it's been raining more in Houston than in other parts of Texas?
Why?
Because the rain God doesn't like Rick Perry. And Rick,
I suspect that.
Yes,
that, yeah.
And Houston did not vote for Rick Perry last November.
That's right.
Or November of 2010, that is.
That's right.
Yes.
This is similar to Jerry Falwell and Katrina. Yeah. Right? They had a gay parade, therefore we didn't have Katrina. But he didn't discuss the Corps of Engineers or any of those things.
Not a buddy of Rick Perry.
Yeah. All right.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Scott.
I think, Otis, sometimes things happen that kind of lead people to believe in things like God.
No,
but the thing is that it's like, I would never want to talk someone out of what they believe only to convince them to live up to that golden rule that is part of their religion. Because really, if everyone did that, the world would be a better place, wouldn't it?
We don't want that.
No.
Then what would we talk about? Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
The thing is, people who say they know what God wants, we don't know. And that's the truth. We do not know. We can infer from evidence, but we can't say that God does this and God did that. And in a way, that's kind of cruel. I'm sorry, Bill. Welcome, Bill. Hey, you there?
Hello?
Yeah, yeah, it's you, baby.
That's Bill?
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry, it was all fuzzy. Yes, fascinating question and something that I ponder on occasion. And this is what I'm going to respond is kind of a side jump, but I think it's real. That there is, and you've certainly heard people talk about, you know, the difference between, you know, the rest of the week and Sunday. There is indeed for many people a religion of capital, of ownership.
And, okay, are we talking about Calvinism?
Well, certainly that is true in Calvinism, yeah.
Okay. America,
whole Protestant ethic.
America is very Calvinist.
It's
all
a,
of the original,
proof,
the Puritans.
Really a proof of one's salvation or one's selection.
Right,
that
okay.
one is successful in this life.
Okay, and that's...
And that exists at a very subconscious level today. You won't hear a lot of people pitching it straight out. But subconsciously, in our culture, people do have kind of a religious feeling towards that.
Well,
and then because it's a religious feeling, they confuse it with their religious feeling.
I would argue that it's extended into culture in general.
No, I was going to say that the first, I mean, a number of people moved here. The Pilgrims of the Puritans, particularly, I'm going to say, moved here for religious freedom because they were all Church of England, but they were running into all kinds of problems with the Church of England, and a lot of that had to do with the fact that they were basically Calvinists.
Right.
So a lot of the early religious colonies in the United States were basically Calvinist, which has to do with election, predestination, and if God, you know, if you have money, then that means God loves you, and if you don't, it means you've made God angry. That's why you don't have
basically
money.
Like a heretical idea on the faith of Christianity.
Well,
it's more than a predestination piece that if one is already among the chosen, then it will be revealed in the manifested in physical world.
Yeah, yeah. But here's the thing. I mean, this is, again, my question. Even though that may be true, even though, let us just say that, you know, predestination, we accept that God is totally committed to that, the theories of Jean Chauvin, the great, that is also chauvinist, comes from the same guy. By the way, I believe it does. Somebody could correct me. Calvin is the Anglicization of Jean Chauvin, who was the Swiss theologian who came up with those ideas.
Mm-hmm.
So even if you accept that, even if that's true, does that release you from your responsibility for your fellow man, your neighbor, as pretty consistently stated throughout the Bible, Old and New Testament, and I believe that's also in the Quran.
Not logically, but this isn't a logical issue. It is people's subconscious values dictating their beliefs, and because people in positions in the corporate world say it is their obligation to reward the shareholder or the stockholder. They rationalize anything that accrues a profit as fulfilling a moral, religious belief, and people don't really realize it. And if you ask people, you know, at church about this distinction, they'll just mumble something.
Yeah, right, because it's you can't connect the two. You cannot
connect the two.
You cannot, you know, and. There's also the theory of Christianity, Gary and Frank, I'm going to get to you. Don't go away. There's the thing in Christianity, one of the things that separates Christianity and I think Islam from some other religions is the value of belief. Christianity is a religion that's based on belief.
Yes.
And the other religions, Buddhism, you don't need to believe anything to be a Buddhist.
No.
There's no requirement for you to believe. But Christianity... You got to believe, and you know the evidence is the creed. You know,
you got to believe a certain belief.
Yeah, and the
people that you're with in church believe.
Yeah, the Nicene Creed was a contract that was developed by a group of competing religions so that you could all agree with you know these particular beliefs that you had to believe.
Yeah.
Everybody but the Church of England. Mm-hmm. But anyway, what am I saying? I'm just saying, I'm restating essentially what you said, Bill, which is it's interesting. But this is the thing that I'm fascinated by, the human ability to separate things that they
that are taught. Yeah, and that's why your original question was really just a great question, and it's something for all of us to ponder. And try to avoid in our own lives as best as possible.
Well, I think everybody is trying. Even some of these guys may be trying, but the pressures are too great. You know, I love forgiveness and redemption. I think that's an incredibly powerful tool. I mean, I'm going to forgive Ron Paul for the craziness of all that racist stuff.
Yeah.
Because I don't think he's a racist. He's treated, he has for no charge delivered too many black babies to be a racist.
Yeah.
You know, in my opinion.
Let me just say one more thing.
Repeat that next time stuff gets sent out. He's going to look at it and make sure it conforms to what he wants to say.
This also mixes over into divine right. Because in the corporate world, the CEO is the counterpart of the sovereign.
Yeah,
and so one honors the sovereign as the divine representative of God.
But who invented divine
right?
In
my corporation one time, Bill, listen, by someone who really cared about me. Listen, you got to understand. What you got to do, your job is to make the boss happy.
Yeah.
And once that begins to happen, you get trapped and your mind really gets twerked around.
Yeah, you're being pulled in all ways. It was James the First who invented divine right, as I recall.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he decided that was a good thing. Thank you, Bill.
Sure.
Terrific.
Enough, thank you.
Thanks. And Gary. Hey, Gary.
Hello. I am a Taoist that was raised as a Christian.
Now a Taoist is a person who follows the path.
I was raised as a Christian, and I would like to read you a poem that addresses this issue.
Now, Gary, are you asserting that this will solve the whole question, or will it just illuminate it?
Are you ready?
Yeah.
All right, the name of the poem is Bewildered.
Who wrote it? Can I ask who wrote it?
How reconcile this paradox, this creator who loves creation, with the brutality and blood that makes it turn, the endless flow of life, forms granted their existence by the eating of each other, the bewildered, starving young, still awaiting their dead mother. How resolve this lack of compassion, this cruelly designed summation, by the one who loves us all, those lost to fire and fang and flood, or blown from nests and storms. We will reason, for we are human, and create our fine religions, which our reason then deforms.
Pretty cool.
Thank you.
And I got a question about Taoism. Taoism, I'm very attracted to Taoism myself, although I haven't studied it. And it's generally the religion that older Chinese people become part of.
Well,
it's like an old person's religion, and it's about following the path, right? Following the Tao.
Well, Taoism is two things. It is a religion in China, but it is also a philosophy. So one does not need to follow the religion to understand the philosophy.
Right, and it's following the path of what is referred to in the I Ching as the superior man, right?
I guess you could say that. That would be correct. But
that would be close.
It's not like the path of the Buddha. It's more of an understanding of the nature of being.
Right.
And how good and bad are the same exact thing.
Right.
Okay, so you have to understand that there is no good and bad, and there's no heaven and hell, and there's no devil and God, that there is just being, and what's good is bad, and what's bad is good, and this is the way of life. And that's what Tao Te Ching means. The book that Lao Tzu wrote, Tao Te Ching, means the way of life and its virtue, and how to understand and survive the cycles of life, because nothing that's good is all bad, nothing that's bad is all good.
I can say in here that in Taoism there is the concept that you treat others the way you want to be treated, in the broadest sense.
Well, there are many things in Taoism that people ascribe to Jesus Christ that they say that he picked up when he supposedly went to India. Things like a journey of 1,000 steps a journey of 1,000 miles begins with one step. And you know, many concepts that are Taoist or Buddhist that Jesus may have picked up, and it's kind of an interesting thing. Those who live by the sword will die by the sword, and many ideas that were Eastern in origin that kind of ended up in the Christian philosophy.
Hey, there's actually a group of Chinese people that's a Christian group that call Christ the eternal Tao. That's what they call him.
Well, Christ was not the only person to die and be resurrected. You know, we also have Mithra, and we have a number of... Yeah,
and Tao is the Chinese word for way.
Right. Right. And there's also a great book, and I cannot remember the author that I read. It was a wonderful book called The Gospel of Rufus, where he's the 13th apostle that we never hear about in the Bible, and he was black. And he accompanied Jesus on his trip before he started his ministry. And they went to Tibet, and they went to Calcutta. And I can't remember where else they went. It's a very funny book and, you know, illustrative in a way. And, you know, he keeps saying that Jesus just doesn't get it, but I'll help him figure it out.
Well, actually, there are like about 20 Gospels, and that's called the Apocrypha.
Right. Well, a lot of them aren't even in the Apocrypha.
Well,
the Gospel of Mary's not in the Apocrypha.
The
Gospel of
the Council of Nicaea.
Well, they threw stuff.
Where they cut it down to like the four Gospels, but there are many Gospels that are not included, and you have to get the Apocrypha.
No, they're not. They're not in
the Apocrypha. Is actually Old Testament books that were removed by the Jews hundreds of years after Christ. If you are familiar with the Eastern churches, like the Orthodox churches in the East, they use the Apocrypha because the Jewish laws and books were translated into Greek about 100 years before Christ, and so the Greek speaking Christians read the Greek. Apocrypha instead of the Old Testament that we are familiar with now.
But I have to say, Gary, that the Gospels, the Gospel of Mary, the Gospel of Thomas, there are a bunch of them. I think Joseph of Arimathea had one. I'm not sure. But I don't think they're in the Apocrypha.
Well, the Apocrypha
you'd have to go and find them. Does it?
The testimony of those who knew Jesus that
I'm
are
have to
not
check mine.
Mark, Matthew, Luke, and John.
Okay, well, I'm going to check mine when I get home. I didn't bring
the Bible.
That's
the New Testament, right?
Yeah. Oh, no, absolutely.
And what about, who was it? Was it Timothy that was in India with Jesus?
That I don't know. I do not know.
Okay, so, I mean, there's a lot of cross-pollination between Eastern philosophy and the philosophy of Jesus that you will not find in the Hebrew text.
Right, but they were all, quote, Eastern, and Jesus reflects a lot of things in his teachings that existed in other places.
The New Testament was mostly written in Greek, actually. It wasn't written in Hebrew.
I mean, it's the old story about, there is one pasture with many gates, and God opens all gates for all people. Now, you can't believe that God condemns every Buddhist and Taoist and Hindu to hell because they don't follow Jesus. God gave us many paths.
But that all came later. You know, I mean, we're talking about the Council of Nicaea. You got these old men who have to be very careful. They got to get rid of Jesus' wife because Jesus could not have been perfect as a Jewish boy if he did not get married and give his booby some children. Okay? I mean, that's just like basic. So Jesus had to have been married. And so what they did was they took Mary Magdalene, who was his wife, as far as we can tell, and turn her into a prostitute in order to make sure that didn't happen.
Well,
we had a lot of women in the early days. We had Phoebe. We had women who were very, very active in the congregations and leading them. That had to be removed. A bunch of stuff had to be done before they would release that religion and it could become a true conqueror's religion, which is more or less what it is now.
That concept of the holy blood, the holy grail, where Mary Magdalene actually went to southern France and Holy Grail, you know, actually means the holy blood, and that maybe the blood of Jesus was in the Merangelot line. Is you put any credence in that?
Well, you know, all of that stuff, you know, the Da Vinci Code and those things.
Fiction.
No, but I'm saying,
he's claiming it in history here.
Well, but whose history?
Well, and a lot of people believe that Mary Magdalene actually went to southern France and that her blood was the result of the Marengo line that ended up being the kings of France.
Well, that's good. That's
because
good.
Because they believe that they were descended from God because they were descended from Jesus.
Well, but just imagine if you're going to become a king of France, and you know, if you figure that's what you want to do, one of the things you do is claim, you know, that you're legitimate. If you look at the way the Gospels are written, Mark, the first Gospel, the shortest Gospel, does not talk about the birth and does not talk about the resurrection.
Well, two of the Gospels don't even mention the birth, actually.
No. No. Does Matthew mention the birth?
No, only
okay.
Only,
it's Luke and John.
Luke and John.
So Matthew was the second gospel, and Matthew goes a little farther. Matthew does have the lineage in it, I believe. He has the lineage of
that's
Joseph.
Well, that's the reason that believe that the earth is 6,000 years old.
Okay, no. What I'm just saying. No, hold on. I'm only making one point. that the gospels by progression make greater and greater claims for Jesus' legitimacy. So finally we have John, which says, in the beginning was the Word. So it's like he wasn't even born. He existed, you know, way, way, way back when.
Right.
So you're always going to have people claiming legitimacy. What a better way to do it than say, you know, I'm descended from Jesus. You know, I'm in the house of David. I mean, they couldn't even allow Jesus to be God. Let's say that's true. I'm postulating that. In the Gospels, they had to say that he was descended from David so that they could connect to the prophecies and, you know, and all the other stuff instead of just looking at guys. This guy's really cool. He's saying some great things. If we do what he says, maybe it'll work.
You know? Every myth has a seed of reality in it.
Well,
The Chinese dragons, you know, I mean, we think that's fantastical dragons, but yet they discovered the skeletons of Tyrannosaurus Rex in China. You know, so
no.
You know, they're and just the same thing with this. Who was it in England that slayed the dragon?
St. George, who killed the last Atlantosaurus.
Right. Yeah. Well, there's always some kind of origin to a myth, and there is a possibility that these stories were, you know, carried on verbally and orally for many years, and there's no proof that Mary Magdalene did not go.
No, absolutely not, and you can't prove it. Gary, I got to let you go.
All right, I appreciate
thanks
it.
Thanks a lot. That was terrific. And 713-526-5738 is our number. I was really talking about the ability of people to rationalize, people who say they are Christians, how they can rationalize their behavior when they're really just screwing hundreds of thousands of people. And that's kind of what we were talking about, not talking about whether or not God is real.
It kind of seems like the idea of whether he's real or not and how these things happen scientifically matters more to some people than the principles. And so they're Christian, they go to church, and they have all these ideas about how this existed and that existed and this is the way that it is, but the principles are slipping by or something.
Yeah,
you know?
Well, it's trees and forest.
Right.
Hey, Frank, thanks for being patient.
Oh, you really opened up a can of worms on this one.
That's what somebody else said, you know.
Yeah.
And then we can talk about the diet of worms.
Oh, as you can go on.
Remember the diet of worms? That was a major religious event where they had to make some, I don't remember the specific decisions, but it was a huge religious Christian conclave. The diet of worms. Anyway.
Okay. All right. But, you know, you've heard this thing that the counterfeit is an argument for the real, you know, and all the things that you've said are, I think, you're preaching to the choir, mostly the people on KPFT.
Probably,
100%.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, to compare things like, you know.
Well, I'm really looking for that ability. How do we rationalize that? I was just looking for that. That's been a question for a long time.
Yeah, it's true. And all this stuff about the politicians, the hypocrisy and all that stuff is really almost pandemic. We all see it. But it's just a suggestion if somebody, nobody's going to be convinced by our conversation here. We're all kind of suspending our views. But I might make a suggestion that if someone would like to approach this thing about faith and so forth, because usually the contrast is between faith, which is abject fanaticism, versus sensible, compassionate reasoning, but there is.
I don't know. I don't agree with that. I personally am at worst an agnostic. You know, I admit that I believe there is some kind of overall, there's something going on, you know, that we don't know about. And there may be some cognition with it. It may not just be an automatic thing. So I'm there. I talk to God myself, you know, and so I have faith, but I don't think that drives me to be fanatical about it.
No, but it I think
obviously.
Among a lot of people who are, you know, known for their comments and one thing or another, they do tend to identify craziness sometimes with Christianity.
Yeah.
And you know, that's what I mean, but not that.
Well, I could be considered crazy talking to the invisible man in the sky.
Yeah, I know, but that really pushes it also to some other things that that might be a little bit more unacceptable. But I was just going to make a suggestion. If someone would love to study about it, an interesting degree is this small book called Mere Christianity by C.S. Lewis. He approaches it from a rational, sensible, and yet compassionate point of view, you know. And that's something somebody could maybe look up if they want to.
And he was a great theologian, English, and later became a Roman Catholic. And I don't think it changed it. And he wrote the Screwtape Letters.
Yes, he did.
Which are the letters from the devil on the earth, an angel that the devil sends. Wasn't that what it was?
Yeah, Screwtape was his,
was his
man in charge, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it was a very interesting. He has a very, in fact, another thing, in case somebody doesn't want to take the trouble of reading any of his books, this movie with Anthony Hopkins, Deborah Winger, called Shadowlands is an excellent movie that portrays his personal, you know, his life. And,
right.
And also, it's a sensible approach. One other thing, just for that.
We don't want to mention Mark Twain, right?
What?
We don't want to mention Letters from the Earth. Mark Twain's book.
That's a good one, too.
I read that C.S. Lewis wrote a letter to this Greek man that said that he didn't want to be Catholic. He wanted to be Eastern Orthodox, but he doesn't speak Greek.
Okay. How theological.
He became Catholic.
But anyway, that's something for all of us to think about. If you want to study a good discussion of a subject from a rational point of view, which is not necessarily opposed to faith, but more or less into it, that's a good one to read, is Mere Christianity, you know.
Cool.
But anyway, I love you and appreciate you opening up this subject and all the people, and Happy New Year to all y'all.
Thanks, Frank.
Yeah,
Happy New Year to you.
I've always enjoyed the different time when you come on the show over the years,
Thank you.
And we've never met, but I appreciate your thought and your love for
thanks
the
a bunch.
Truth.
I'm not going to cut you off while you're saying nice things about me.
All right. All right, but I'll cut myself off.
Rock and roll.
All right, love
later.
You.
Later. Happy New Year. Joseph.
Yeah, I'd like to make a comment. If you divide the scriptures from just simple testimony to the word coming from God, what I see is that as Christ started his ministry at the age of 30, he no longer spoke just like you and I do. He spoke only in parables from that time on. And he said, I come in the Father's name, so he came in the behalf of God. And what I believe is it was actually God speaking at the time. As a matter of fact, at one time they accused him of doing evil for curing someone on the Sabbath.
Well, he was breaking the law, theoretically.
Well, he's breaking their law, but not God's law.
Well, no, but from their point of view, he was working on the Sabbath. You know?
But the thing is, after they condemned him, he said, I do cures today, tomorrow, and on the third day I shall be perfected. So if you look at 1,000-year time frames, and it said that to God a day was like 1,000 years, you could look at 6,000 years back, and that would be from the time that religion got started in the Christian Judeo-religion, and that would be the sixth day when God created man. All right? And then if you start looking at it in an abstract, see, all the all the old prophecies were in abstract. They'd have like a big giant, or they'd have a tree, and the tree would be symbolic of the Messiah to come. And it, even in Moses' day, when he was leading the people around in
circles,
the desert, you know, around right. circles, they came to a big body of water, and then it was so bitter they couldn't drink it. So God told Moses to pull a tree up by its roots and throw it into the water, and it absorbed the bitterness of it. And then they could drink the water. Well, that was symbolic of the Christ, a tree. But if you look at the scriptures, he said, I'll put a root in Zion, and from the root a branch would grow. And that's where the Mormons get their belief that Joseph Smith is the branch.
Well, and, you know, you could the thing about the Bible, Joseph, you must know, because obviously you've read it.
Yeah.
You can find anything you
but
need.
I'm a believer. I'm a believer.
Well, but that
without going to church.
But I'm saying, you know, I'm pretty much a believer too. But a lot of the logistics and a lot of the technical stuff, I'm not necessarily, like, I'm not sure what happens after death, but I know it's taken care of. I don't have to worry about it. You know, you can pick anything out of the Bible to prove a point. And that's what, you know, the proof text approach, which is, you know, outside of the context. And, I mean, you can do anything you want with it. And it's full of symbolism, as you pointed out. And some of these are wonderful symbolisms. One of my favorite things is there, what do we got, 20 seconds left?
Hey. Oh, not much.
Yeah, I got like 20 seconds left. When do we have to be out? Doyle, when do we have to be out? At 58?
58, man.
Oh, my God. We're done. Hey, Joseph, we got to go.
When will you
be back
on here?
I don't know. Sometime, eventually.
Okay. Well,
Happy New Year. Happy New Year. And I'm sorry I cut you off. He was thanking me. And I'm Otis. I've been sitting in for Leo, who will be back next week. And next year will be he'll be back next year.
Good
right?
show, Otis.
And love you all. And I will see you next time. And this is me sitting in for the New Capitol. This was the New Capitol. Really?
It's a fact that public broadcasting is the most trusted media institution in the nation. And it's a fact that you simply can't get any alternative media outlet like KPFT Houston anywhere else on the radio dial. KPFT is not driven by the ratings game. It's not swayed by advertising dollars. KPFT is created only to serve you. And that's exactly why we're asking you to support KPFT now. During the month of December, KPFT is launching its first quiet campaign. We are asking you to remember all the reasons you listen to us and to visit kpft.org to donate. Through your online pledges now, KPFT is aiming to reduce the number of days of on-air fundraising we do next year. Grab your credit card and make that tax-deductible year-end donation online at kpft.org. It doesn't take much, but it does take everyone to make KPFT all it is. Do your part today, and thank you for your support.
Pacifica is listener-sponsored radio. Listener sponsorship is an answer to the practical problem of getting better radio programs and keeping them. A focus on advertisers or the mass audience accounts for the mediocrity of corporate radio. With such mediocrity, improvement of radio is utopian. When listeners support the radio they enjoy, their choices become better. Listener sponsorship takes control of your radio out of the hands of companies and into the hands of the community. But maintaining this sort of radio requires you. Your pledge of support keeps KPFT on the air as a vital community resource. So call our membership department at 713-526-4000, extension 314, to become a member today. You can even go online at kpft.org to make your pledge. Your pledge is essential to keep listener sponsorship viable for generations to come. So call 713-526-4000 to support KPFT. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, KPFT Houston.